Can I answer any questions for you? We probably have a little time. Getting a little warm in here, but maybe you have some questions? Yes. Yes.
Just about the G-forces and taking off and the sonic boom impact on India.
The G-forces on launch and the sonic boom on coming back. The G-forces for launch are not as bad as they were in earlier rockets because we build up our speed more gradually. There's a real kick in the seat of the pants when you come off the pad. By the time you launch the, by the time you clear the launch tower with the tail of the orbiter, you're going 130 miles an hour. So you do get a pretty good kick there, and you're lying on your back looking up, so the forces are this way, but it really feels kind of like going really fast in a very fast race car. It's not horribly uncomfortable. It's kind of a real quick acceleration. Then there are various parts of the launch phase where we get up a little over 1G, so you begin to feel a little heaviness, but not much, until about 30 seconds before the engines cut off. At about 8 minutes into the flight, when the G-forces build up to 3 Gs, so you really feel like there's something sitting on top of you. You weigh three times as much. It gets hard to breathe and hard to talk, but it only lasts about 30 seconds, and then the main engine's cut off, and you're completely weightless. And so it's kind of this gradual build-up. It gets uncomfortable, and then you're there, so it's not difficult. The sonic boom, if you think about it, when we come back, when we pass through the speed of sound, we're going, when we're circling the Earth, we're going Mach 25, which is 25 times the speed of sound. But as we slow down and enter the Earth's atmosphere, we get slower and slower and slower. We come through the quote-unquote sound barrier, Mach 1, just as we're overhead the runway. And what that is, of course, is the shockwave building up on the shuttle. And we actually have a shockwave that builds up on the nose of the shuttle, and they think on the tail of the shuttle, so that there's a double sonic boom. People in Los Angeles when we land in California, or the people in Florida when we land there, hear a boom boom as we pass over. We don't hear it because we're out ahead of it. It ends up being back behind us. But it is very distinctive, and there are not too many things that cause that double boom. So people in Los Angeles, you know, say, oh, there they go again. The people in Florida sitting on the beaches say, you know, where is it? It must have just gone by. But we're not aware of it, just the people on the ground. The questions about how we do this? Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, you don't, because the shuttle, once it enters the Earth's atmosphere, is a glider. It weighs 100 tons, over 100 tons. And it's a glider. It doesn't have any engines on it that can do anything. So you really have to manage your energy. It's a question of energy management. You have a certain altitude and thus a certain amount of energy. And we begin, as we enter the Earth's atmosphere, we lose a lot of our energy as heat. As we come into the atmosphere, we hit the air molecules, they heat up, the bottom of the shuttle gets very hot, but we dissipate a lot of energy that way. And as we come further and further down, we begin swinging back and forth to bleed off more energy. If you were thinking of flying an airplane and you knew where you had to land and you were higher than you really needed to be, what you do is swing out and swing back. Our computers and the ground help us a lot with that to make sure we're dissipating energy at the same amount as we go along. And then as we come over the landing site, we swing out and make a large circle. Again, we can vary the size of that circle as we come over to land. It's a very steep glide angle. Usually, if you're flying a light plane, when you're lined up for final approach, the runway is somewhere way out there. When we line up for final approach, the runway is about 50,000 feet down that way. So it's a very steep angle as we come down, and it's only until we're about 1,700 feet above the ground we pull the nose up and get that final slowdown, throw out the gear, and do the landing. So we carry plenty of energy until we're assured of making the runway, and then we try to get rid of some of it. But it's something that we really need computers for, because you can't do that in your head. And luckily, our computers do a pretty good job of it. We've never really had any problems with making the landings. Our pilots are also very good at doing this and handling any malfunctions that we might face. Yes?
A number of astronauts have mentioned noticing environmental degradation.
tell that, environmental degradation. There are places like Madagascar and the rainforest in the Amazon basin where you can see how they're clear cutting and how the sediments are just, you know, the topsoil is just running down the rivers, and you know that that can't be replaced quickly. You can also see smog, bad air pollution. I'm trying to think of other things. But you know, it's not always man-made. As I mentioned, after Mount Pinatubo, we get a sunrise and a sunset every 45 minutes. We go around the Earth every 90 minutes. So you can look into the sunrise and sunset, and you can see the different layers of the atmosphere. And when the air is dirty, you can see the dirt at a particular layer of the atmosphere. It rises up to that layer and is stopped. And after Mount Pinatubo, for a couple of years, you could see that dirt ash layer there. So nature does an awful lot more pollution than man does. But you can see areas of the Earth that are being used up very rapidly, and it's a kind of a shame to see. And all we can do is take pictures of it, bring it back, and show people what's going on and hope that they can correct some of it.